Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Kelly Jean Kelly, Katie Weaver, and Pete Musto. Later, we will bring you the first part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Susan Shand.
China warned on Wednesday that it is ready for war if Taiwan made any move toward independence. China considers the island a rebel Chinese province. Defense Ministry spokesman Wu Tian spoke to reporters following the release of a high-level Chinese military planning report. Wu said that China would make its greatest effort for peaceful reunification with Taiwan. However, we must firmly point out that seeking Taiwan independence is a dead end, he said. China also denounced the United States' decision to sell arms to the government of the island. It accused the United States of attempting to destroy international balance. The U.S. Defense Department said this month that State Department officials had approved the sale of weapons requested by Taiwan. The weapons include tanks and missiles, estimated to be worth $2.2 billion. The United States is Taiwan's main arms supplier. China said it would order sanctions on U.S. companies involved in any such deals. Taiwan's Mainland Affairs Council later said China's behavior seriously violated the peace principle in international laws and relations. America has no official ties with Taiwan. However, a 1979 U.S. law requires the U.S. to defend the country. Reporters at the gathering asked about China's military plan to deal with the growing protests in Hong Kong. Large crowds have been protesting an extradition proposal between Hong Kong and China. Wu answered that Beijing had the right to send troops into Hong Kong to stop the protests if it is requested by Hong Kong's government. Wu also commented on reports of a secret agreement with Cambodia to permit Chinese military use of a Cambodian naval base on the Gulf of Thailand. He said the reports were false. China and Cambodia have in the past carried out positive exchanges and cooperation on military exercises, training, and other activities, he said. This kind of cooperation does not target any third party, he added. I'm Susan Shand.
Are big technology companies too big? Are they doing enough to protect users' privacy? Like Europe before it, the U.S. government seems ready to try to place limits on its technology giants. But doing so may be more difficult than it seems. This week, the U.S. Department of Justice, or DOJ, opened an investigation of major technology companies following months of concern expressed in Congress and elsewhere The main question, have tech companies hurt competition, slowed innovation, or caused other harm? The investigation, which could look at companies such as Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon, will take into account widespread concerns about social media, search engines, and online retail services. Also this week, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission said that Facebook Inc. will pay a record-breaking $5 billion fine to settle a government investigation into its privacy practices. The FTC said that Facebook's data policy was deceptive to tens of millions of people. Under the settlement, Facebook's leaders will create an independent privacy committee. The FTC also reportedly plans to fine Google for the way it dealt with children's information on YouTube. Both liberal and conservative American politicians have criticized tech companies. Democratic presidential candidates, for example, have called for stricter rules and even breakups of the big tech companies. Amazon CEO and founder Jeff Bezos says Amazon is small compared to other companies in international retail. In a recent letter to shareholders, he wrote, "There are much larger retailers in every country where we operate." And that's largely because nearly 90% of retail remains offline in brick-and-mortar stores. Facebook Vice President and spokesman Nick Clegg criticized calls for breaking up the company. He said Facebook accepts that with success comes accountability. But he argued that the government should not break up companies to enforce accountability. The American technology industry developed without much government supervision, notes a paper published by Congressional Research Services, or CRS. American antitrust law could apply to the big technology companies. But CRS notes antitrust actions against them would raise complex legal issues. Big tech companies are difficult targets because U.S. antitrust law does not easily apply to companies offering low-cost goods or free online services. Traditional American antitrust law centers on large businesses that harm consumers through price gouging and similar acts. Many tech companies offer free products. Some, such as Amazon, also offer low prices on many goods. I'm Jill Robbins.
Of Nike Company running shoes from 1972 sold for a record-breaking $437,500 in a public auction Tuesday. The so-called Nike Moon Shoe was one of the first Nike shoes. They were designed for runners at the 1972 Olympic Trials. The sale was made at Sotheby's Auction House in New York. Officials there said the price set a new record for a pair of sneakers. Canadian investor and car collector Miles Nadal bought the shoes. Nadal last week paid $850,000 for 99 other pairs of rare or limited collection sneakers that Sotheby's was offering. Before Tuesday, the highest price at a public auction for sneakers was $190,373 in California in 2017. That was for a pair of signed Converse shoes that basketball star Michael Jordan reportedly wore in the 1984 Olympic Finals, Sotheby's said. Sotheby's is best known for selling artworks for tens of millions of dollars. But it has been working with streetwear marketplace Stadium Goods to auction 100 pairs of the rarest sneakers ever produced. The handmade moon shoe was one of only 12 pairs ever made. The pair sold Tuesday are the only ones known to exist in an unworn condition, Sotheby's said. Nadal expressed excitement about his purchase. He called the moon shoe a true historical artifact in sports history and pop culture. He said he plans to show them, along with his 99 other newly bought shoes, at his private automobile center in Toronto. Noah Wunsch is the head of international e-commerce at Sotheby's. He said the sneaker auction brought together art, culture, and fashion. We are eager to see where this sale takes us, not only in future sneaker offerings, but also in other new luxury lifestyle areas, Wunsch said. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
A robot, designed to carry things, moves quickly across a field to gather equipment at a sports event. The equipment, like javelins and discuses, had been thrown by competitors. Another robot moves a human-sized screen on wheels. It is designed to permit virtual attendance at the event. And then there are the robots designed to look like the smiling, friendly creatures, or mascots, that act as Olympic Games representatives. All these robots are part of preparations for the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo, Japan. Japanese carmaker Toyota Motor Corporation presented the machines to reporters earlier this week. Toyota is a major supporter of the 2020 Olympic Games.
The mascot robots have moving arms and legs, and their eyes change to the image of stars and hearts. They cannot speak at all or walk very well. But Tomohisa Moridaira, lead engineer, suggested several possibilities, such as getting the robot to hold the Olympic torch using magnets. The field support robot is a small bus-shaped machine based on a Toyota ride-sharing vehicle still in development. The field support robot can travel as fast as 20 kilometers per hour. It holds three cameras and one special sensor that lets it see its surroundings. Around the top of its body are special lights that brighten when the vehicle is active. Its artificial intelligence helps it avoid barriers. It is also able to vary its path in order to protect areas of grass. However, it cannot go find the objects, which can weigh up to 8 kilograms, or pick them up on its own. A person has to travel with the device, pick up the objects, and put them in it. Then, with a press of a button, the vehicles transport the equipment where it needs to go.
Takeshi Kuwabara supervised the robot's development. He said it is designed to team robots and humans. Our aim was to leverage the strengths of both humans and robots, he said. Toyota's Robotics Center in the United States developed the moving screen, known as the TTR1. It takes the car maker's usual business of transportation to another level. It is a moving, human-sized screen designed to represent people who cannot physically attend the games. Like all the world's major car makers, Toyota uses robotics in production sites. But it has also designed human-like robots, including those that play musical instruments. The Q3 is Toyota's basketball-throwing robot. The general size and shape of a human, the Q3 sensors compute a three-dimensional image of the basketball court the robot is in. Then, its motors use that information to correctly angle the ball and determine the amount of force needed to shoot it into the basket. In other words, it scores a goal.
The Q3 is very good at this. The organization Guinness World Records recently honored it on its list for making 2,020 baskets in a row. Toyota had already developed a large group of robots on wheels to perform house duties for old people and hospital patients. These machines will now also guide disabled guests to seating at the Olympics. The robots will also serve food and drinks at events. The carmaker plans to use the games to present its new vehicle technologies. These include buses fueled by a special kind of battery and self-driving taxis. Toyota is competing with other carmakers and technology companies to develop low-cost, robot-controlled cars and electric vehicles. The use of small cars to gather equipment at Olympics throwing events goes back to the 2008 Beijing Games. There, bright red rocket-shaped cars collected objects like javelins and discuses. At the 2012 London Games, the car maker BMW developed and operated a group of blue and orange smaller Mini Coopers to collect equipment. Small green robotic trucks performed the duty at the Rio Games in 2016. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Woodrow Wilson, America's 28th president, established the National Park Service in 1916 to protect the wild and wonderful landscapes in the United States. But it is an earlier leader who is considered the father of America's national parks. In 1906, Theodore Roosevelt, America's 26th president, signed the American Antiquities Act. The law permitted him and future presidents to take immediate action
to protect important cultural or natural resources. The Antiquities Act led to the creation of many of the 413 sites within the National Park Service today.
No president has played a bigger role in protecting the country's natural and cultural resources than Theodore Roosevelt. During his time in office, he established 5 new national parks and 18 national monuments. In all, he protected over 93 million hectares of public land. He became known as the conservationist president. Roosevelt's concern for the land and environment came from the time he spent in the Dakota Territory, beginning in the 1880s. The area where he traveled is now the state of North Dakota. Today, you will find a national park there named in his honor. The park protects badlands, wildlife, scenic views, as well as 2 ranches where Roosevelt himself once lived. Welcome to Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
Theodore Roosevelt came to Dakota Territory in September 1883. He was a young married man from New York, where his political career was just beginning. He came to Dakota in hopes of hunting huge animals called bison. He also had a great interest in the Western frontier lifestyle. Roosevelt soon developed an interest in raising cattle. Cattle ranching in Dakota was a big business in the 1880s. Cattle fed on the land's healthful grasses. He and a partner entered the business. Roosevelt invested $14,000 to build the Maltese Cross Ranch. Roosevelt returned to New York while workers constructed the ranch. He resumed his political duties in Albany, the state capital. But in early 1884, he experienced 2 great personal losses. His mother and wife died of illnesses on the same day, February 14th. Roosevelt described the pain and loss in his diary with only 1 sentence: "The light has gone out of my life."
Roosevelt again headed west in the summer of 1884. He sought to escape the reminders of his recent losses. He arrived at his newly built Maltese Cross Ranch. He also decided to build a second ranch in a quieter, more remote area. He called that ranch Elkhorn. Roosevelt traveled between New York and Dakota, working both as a state lawmaker and a cattle rancher. In late 1884, he helped form an organization in Dakota to help protect ranchers' rights. In 1885, Roosevelt published his first book about his experiences as a rancher and hunter. In it, he predicted that the cattle industry of the Dakota Badlands was not sustainable. In other words, it would not last. Roosevelt was right. Severe weather struck the area in 1886 and 1887. In the winter, a terrible freeze killed many cattle. The animals that survived the cold soon starved. Roosevelt himself lost over half of his cattle. He decided to get out of the business. The experience, however, shaped Roosevelt's beliefs about the need for conservation in America. Those beliefs, in turn, helped shape his policies as president.
Visitors to Theodore Roosevelt National Park can experience the Badlands just as Roosevelt did hundreds of years ago. They can also visit the Maltese Cross Cabin, as well as the Elkhorn Ranch area. The park has three main areas: the South Unit, the North Unit, and the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. In the South Unit, visitors can drive along the Scenic Loop Road. It offers many places to see wildlife and the surrounding Badlands. Badlands are very dry places with little vegetation. Wind and water shape Badlands mainly through erosion. The process leaves behind high, flat-topped hills of clay and other soft rock. Many visitors stop to look at Painted Canyon. It gets its name from the colorful exposed rocks there. Trails near the canyon offer visitors a chance to see animals, from the huge American bison to small black-tailed prairie dogs. These animals are not really dogs, they are rodents. Roosevelt described prairie dogs as the most noisy and inquisitive animals imaginable.
The North Unit also offers several hiking trails. Some paths are short and easy. Others may take 2 days to complete. The Achenbach Trail is a 28-kilometer-long path. It crosses the Little Missouri River and takes visitors into the heart of the Theodore Roosevelt Wilderness. The third area of the park is the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. This is what Roosevelt described as his home ranch. He wrote of the ranch in this way: "My home ranch house stands on the river brink. From the low, long veranda, shaded by leafy cottonwoods, one looks across sandbars and shallows to a strip of meadowland, behind which rises a line of sheer cliffs and grassy plateaus."
Today, the Elkhorn Cabin itself no longer stands. Visitors will find only stone rocks where the cabin once was. The area that surrounds Elkhorn, however, is among the most beautiful, wild, and quiet places in the Badlands of North Dakota. It is this peace and beauty that appealed to Roosevelt after the deaths of his mother and wife. But the Dakota Badlands did more than just help Roosevelt overcome his pain. They helped shape the kind of president he would later become. In the words of Roosevelt himself, "I would not have been president had it not been for my experience in North Dakota."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.